Folks back on the phone?
Meeting part two. I don't think they left.
Greg.
Hey, Greg.
Yep, this is John. Yep, Kurt's here.
Good, good. Thank you, guys.
Brett's here on camera here.
Jeremy, is Jeremy still on the phone?
He signed off.
Yeah, I don't know if all you guys were hanging on the line, but Jeremy got on the minute we took our break and said he was available. But Kurt, so you guys got to chat a little bit?
Yeah, we did, and he said he'd keep me posted.
Good. Okay. Let's move right along here. So we wanted to have a sort of a Steelhead powwow, R&E update, and just talk about all things Steelhead, and I know Cameron had sent just this morning some data from the lease, Kelly, and so we could certainly talk about some of the, and that was winter Steelhead data, wasn't it, Cameron? I didn't get a chance to even look at it, but my thought, Bob's thought was we could sort of talk about where we are with our efforts to do monitoring an evaluation of the summer Steelhead program and what kind of work's being done to evaluate winter Steelhead. And I know there are a number of studies underway, and as Bob spoke to earlier, Cuddell's got some important genetics work going on. Is he on the phone, by the way?
I don't know if Chris is on the phone. He'll join us here in a little bit.
Okay.
Oh, good. Thank you. So, I didn't have any specific agenda items other than sort of let's open it up and get the conversation going. We've had these discussions for quite a long time about, you know, where we should go with monitoring and evaluation for the summer Steelhead program, and also we've got issues with winter Steelhead. We just don't know a whole lot about them, and I know they're difficult to track and monitor. You know, we just want to see what we can do in the future and what we know about them to date. And I know that ODF&W has, in the past, submitted proposals to the Corps to do some Steelhead work. A lot of times, unfortunately, the annual task order we put together focuses largely on spring Chinook monitoring. It's the bulk of the program in the upper Willamette. But this, and when we have tried to get some summer Steelhead monitoring work going forward, we've always been budget constrained. So I don't know if there's other workarounds for it or how we might approach some of these things. I also know that ODF&W has sport fishery dollars or other dollars that they have been using in the past to look at some Steelhead work, summer Steelhead. I think that we did some creel work on those. I'm calling them scatter plants. I know there's a new name for them now, whatever they're called. And I don't know if that's been worked up to date, and I don't know how much value it even has. I know that's because those programs were scuttled. But it'd be interesting to know what, you know, findings of those. I don't know, Bob, what do you have?
Well, right now we're just getting ready to solicit proposals for 15. We just went through objective ranking. The one study that's out there that's O&M is the study that Ryan spoke to earlier. And so one of the big things is right now is what have we learned, and if we were going to continue this study on, what would we do differently with whether it be releases or what the study taught us, and what would we do differently and how would we evaluate it? Well, that time frame is right now. If we're going to make a decision on that, we've got to do it real soon here. We're going to do work in FY15 along those lines. So this is the time right now where we need to be evaluating our results and figuring out. We're right at the kind of the... at the end of the period now where we can kind of propose different studies for 15. So we need to make sure we haven't missed a big data gap or something that's out there so we can get something in the hopper in time to pull it off in 15.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons I asked Chris to be on the line too while we discussed this in terms of when we're looking at, and I haven't even seen the data yet, if it's the krill data, if it is, so we're just getting a look at these data. What does it mean in relation to other data we've collected, and what can we do differently in the future? Because if you look at the Steelhead numbers, I think everybody's tracking them, they are so low. And it's log scale return differences between the summers and the winters in the South Santa Ana. I mean, I think we had 218 winters return this last year. And then the numbers I heard earlier for summers, you know, were over 2,000, so.
Yeah.
And I wish Lance was on, because I know the next status review is coming up, and I think the winters are in worse shape than the current status indicates. And I think this downward trend, something's going on, and we need to take action so they don't blink out of existence during our watch.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really valid point. In fact, you know, we have a buy-off from NIMS that says you need to evaluate the effects of the entire Upper Willamette program on two species, and winter steelhead is one of them. And to date, I'm just not sure what we have done, at least from my world, from the hatchery perspective, to evaluate impacts to winter steelhead. I've said this many times.
Well, one thing we've done, Dave, is that genetic analysis on juveniles that we did previously. You want me to go over the results of that, or is everybody familiar enough with it?
Let's hear a brief overview.
And plus, my recollection was, didn't Lance want us to sort of refocus some of those efforts and collect additional data from tributaries? But I do wish Lance was on the phone.
And we're doing that currently, so the timeliness of this discussion is good. I guess just real briefly, in that previous work, we sampled juveniles at Willamette Falls over 3 years and then partnered with NOAA to do a genetic analysis and determine that about 10% of the naturally produced smolts going by Willamette Falls were summer steelhead, so naturally produced summer steelhead. About another 10% were summer-winter hybrids. And then also there was some summer steelhead signal in most of the winter steelhead juveniles that we sampled. So, you know, you're talking 20% or better of the natural production in the basin has some summer steelhead influence. And then we had some information from the subbasins too, where we looked at integration, and that data was basically collected opportunistically, but it looked to us like the integration rates were somewhere between 10-15% in the north and south San Yam. And also that most of the natural production was likely coming out of the McKenzie Basin. So that's kind of a recap of that work that we did previously. Because we collected the juveniles in the subbasins opportunistically, like I said, that was one of the criticisms of that work. And so we got some money recently from our Restoration and Enhancement Board to go through the major subbasins again and collect samples. And we started that in June, and field work will be going on until September. And it's intended to basically mostly answer that question about integration rates within subbasins. So we're looking at the eight major subbasins, east side and west side, including the McKenzie, north and south San Yam, Middle Fork, Yamhill, Tualatin, Malala, Kalapuya, and Pudding. That's actually nine, but the Pudding's part of the Malala. So we've been successful in getting some samples so far, although mostly what I can tell you from this year's effort is that the cutthroat populations are doing great. There's cutthroat everywhere. The Omicas, on the other hand, are kind of hit and miss. We have a sample size goal of 100 in the major subbasins and 50 in the minor ones, and we may or may not reach that goal. But in any case, we're going to have those fish genotyped and basically repeat the analysis that we completed back in 2012 or whatever it is to get a better handle on integration within the subbasins.
And thanks for that, Tom. And what will be really interesting to me is to see how the genotyping and the out-migrating juveniles, how that looks with the returning adults that Chris is currently working up now.
This seems like a perfect time for me to chime in. And one of the components of our study is to do exactly what Bob just said. And that's to use the same markers developed in the study Tom was just describing to genotype adults and classify them by run. And the value of that is going to be that those
adults were collected more or less in proportion to the run at Willamette Falls as they returned.
Right.
And because we have radio telemetry records and can assign a final fate to those fish, we can reconstruct at some level, depending on which sub-basin and how many adults went back there, we'll be able to reconstruct what proportion of the winners that returned each sub-basin, or of all the steelhead, were genetic winners versus genetic summers versus genetic hybrids. And right now we have run about two-thirds of the 2013 samples and have the data from those samples. Those are in the process of being analyzed and classified. And by the end of the summer, we hope to have all of the 2013 steelhead samples run. And then shortly thereafter, we'll start working on the 2014 samples. So we'll have 2 years of data for that.
Hey, Chris, Tom again. What criteria are you going to use for what the hybrid?
We've been talking with Mark, and we'll be... You know, we'll try and use the same criteria you guys are, or at least coordinate that to make sure that everybody's calling a duck.
Okay, good. Yeah, that's great. I think we use, so basically 20% and better with the hybrid. So you'd be including basically F1s and F2s.
Yeah, we'll definitely be. We'll make sure that those two line up.
Okay, cool.
And then just real quick, I can kind of summarize what we've been doing over the last couple of years. We've been doing the general migration studies at Willamette Falls using telemetry to get at escapement by tributary and final distribution of fish and migration behavior. And then we're also doing a little bit of life history work. We have scales from all the fish that we tag so that we can estimate it or a parity rate. And we're also working with the scale lab to kind of go through the scale lab, the ODFW scale lab, Ben's shop, and survey the archive to see what degree of life history variability is present in those samples for adults that return to the various subbasins. The number of, the amount of material available for winter steelhead is pretty thin, so that's going to be not much more than a first cut at taking a look at whether there's much evidence of life history variability in terms of age at out-migration, age at return, and interoperability rate are the three major things we'll look at. And then finally, one last component of our telemetry work is to evaluate the behavior of recycled summer steelhead released below Dexter and Foster dams. That work is ongoing this year as well.
And then, Cam, as part of the baseline monitoring, were you going to speak to, is this the krill data is included in this?
No, not specifically the data I pulled together from the district. I'm speaking for the district because Elise couldn't join us. This is strictly the red index surveys that the district conducts, and we provide a little bit of support for field techs, or did until this past year.
Okay.
So what else is going on? I mean, we just got a summary from ODF&W, U of I, and spoke to some of the work that's being done, and we'll be seeing obviously some more results from Chris and others. Tom, on the genetics.
No, I mentioned it earlier, but we're releasing surrogate winter steelhead in the North Sandy Am pit tag for the first time this year.
And that's real important, Tom. And one thing that I don't think Armini or we have really discussed is when those fish start returning, right, and a couple of people here have brought it up, you know, will they form a core group you could use for potential reintroductions? You've got wild F1 that you could take and put above areas in Detroit or other areas. but we really haven't developed a plan. I think the R&D team, and maybe this falls better on R&D, but was really looking for some direction and guidance on what we could do with those fish. And I think we've kind of got an obligation to work up a good plan.
Yeah, agreed. So you're talking about what we do with the hatchery winners when they return.
Well, I mean, they're surrogates. They're from wild fish. So when these surrogates return, yes.
Isn't there a radioplanetary study for juvenile winter steelhead out-migration and residency that PNNL's been doing over the last couple of years? Is that still ongoing?
We actually, Ryan spoke to, Ryan Harnish is on the phone. As you know, Jeff McMichael left PNNL. Ryan spoke to the results they're seeing this year.
Ah, okay. Never mind.
Sorry, Cameron, here. I think there's an additional study. I don't know if it's a PNNL study. I don't know if it's Ryan in charge of it or not, but it's emigration from Foster Reservoir with some of our winter steelhead surrogates.
Yeah, that would be James Hughes, I believe.
Okay, sorry. Didn't quite remember who that was. So that's another use of the steelhead surrogates. We've got an agreement through this group and from multiple parties that we could use a small number of North Santa Ana winter steelhead surrogates for a study by Hughes in the South Santa Ana.
And that's a passage distribution and behavior as well as entrainment study that's going on. And that's continuing this next year, so that's already programmed into the R&D budget.
Speaking of the R&D budget, we've also been serendipitously, if you like, keeping DNA samples from steelhead that are passed above, winter steelhead that are passed above Foster, and then Fred Monzig's group has collected DNA samples from juveniles entering the reservoir, offspring of the fish we DNA sampled, and we're planning on going forward with continuing to get 100% sample of unclipped winter run steelhead coming back to Foster. We did it this year. Is there a sense of a timeline where a steelhead pedigree study might be supported by the court?
This is a really interesting question. I think because of what's going on with the Chinook above Foster right now, I wouldn't think we're that far off there, and I'm not quite sure why that wasn't. Was that ranked this year? We just sent out the rankings. I thought that it was just the Chinook above Foster we're looking at.
I don't know.
And I should know, Cam. I will follow up on that. Because that's a big part of some of the discussions we were having earlier, right, about where the fish are, or the origin of fish that are below Foster. Were they produced above? Were they produced below? It's probably an amalgamation. What's the proportion? You know, will those fish pass Foster? Are they actively migrating and zipping right through? Or are they using those habitats? And then there are summers in there that compete with the summers that are there.
Okay. So, well, we have 2 years where we censused DNA samples, steelhead above Foster, and now 2 years of young of the year fish that are the offspring of those two spawning broods, juvenile fish. We won't have adult returns for another couple of years.
Another piece of the puzzle, too, since you mentioned Fred, he's continuing to collect info on Omicus in South San Yam and other places from screw trapping, so that size and timing and all that kind of stuff. He's also pit tagging Omicus that he catches there. There hasn't been huge numbers of them, but.
And I believe some of the fish that he's been pit tagging above Foster have been seen at the flat plate on the weir, the bit detector there.
Yeah, but also at Willamette Falls, that's correct.
I recall a while ago, just about a year ago, we had convened a steelhead meeting. I think I was out of town, maybe on vacation or something, but Bob, you were there.
I was there.
And Lance was there, I believe, and some folks. I wasn't there, so I don't know. But I thought in preparation for that meeting, Lance kind of went through this exercise that we're doing right now. He documented steelhead work that's been going on or ongoing. I'm going to try to dig that up. And if I find it, and I will, if it was sent to me, I'm going to send it back out to folks here on this team and others. I'd love to capture all this in a document, you know, 2-page, 3-page memo that just says, here are the things that are going on and here's who's doing it. We're having this good discussion. Tammy's taking incredible notes. It sounds like there's a lot of things in play. But if we look at it like that, sort of holistically, and maybe from the big picture, ultimately the question gets down to, are we doing the appropriate studies and looking at the appropriate things to determine whether or not the Willamette, Operation Willamette Project is continuing to have an effect on ESA, I don't want to say recovery, but I'll say on avoiding jeopardy of winter steelhead. And as Bob pointed out, the numbers don't look great. And, when we've got two tributaries that we're concerned about, and one of them South Sandham, you get 200 of them back, it would be a real bummer to be working through the term of this biological opinion and have steelhead disappear. I'm not saying that'll happen, and I doubt it will, but I just wonder if there are other studies we could be focusing on that would help us understand the impacts, again, of the project, on what's going on out there.
And that's a really important point. That's what I was saying right now. If we're going to pull anything off in 15, this is the time right now where we've got to have it in the hopper or it's not going to happen.
Yep. And that information from Chris, when he gets all the genetic stuff worked up, will be really interesting to look at. All this stuff's really interesting. But I'd be sort of tying it all together into a story where you can go, okay, I think I understand what's happening. And based on this, maybe we could do something else. Or based on this, we don't need to do anything else. And the winter steelhead are going to be fine. I don't know.
So this might be left for a different meeting, but I think that extends to management decisions too. So there's some things we've done already with increasing the bag limit on summers, and changing the way that they're recycled and all that stuff that will come into play.
Yeah, that's a great point, Tom. It really is. You're talking about management policy type things. And policy decisions are informed by good science. So, the more information we can give to your managers or, however it gets conveyed up the pipe, then they have... they have stronger backing to make decisions. Bag limits, maybe eliminating some rainbow trout programs. I don't know. I'm just throwing stuff out.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a good point. All that stuff that they changed was a direct result of our observations of aggression in that previous study. It demonstrates that they're willing to make some changes if we have good information to provide.
Yeah, you got to have good science. And that's why we also appreciate you guys taking a leadership role and continuing on with the juvenile genetic work. I think that's really important.
Are there any concerns about the steelhead population in the McKinsey? Is that, we're watching the McKinsey Spring Chinook going down the tube too. I mean, they're, for whatever odd reason, that sub-basin is getting super low returns of spring chinook, and it has in the last couple of years. And we're not seeing that in the other basins. So what's going on there? I don't know. Is it possible?
I guess there's been less of a concern for steelhead there because it's outside of ESU.
I know, exactly.
Another issue that could be debated since we have seen some winters in there.
Yes, and I don't know. I really don't have any idea, but a lot of odd things are happening out there.
Well, as well as talking about odd things, the coal, we'll talk about some work that is going on. Carl and I have been working with Tom Murtaugh. There was some excess winter tags, steelhead tags that were available. So we're supporting the coho tagging. I think most people are aware. But, you know, there's also these large numbers of cold water that are coming into the North San Diego and elsewhere, and so what kind of effect are they having?
Yep. Anyhow, I don't know. I mean, these are, Bob's point is real, is well taken about, you know, is it timing for 15 work going forward? If we could even somehow, I wish we could take all of the data we're talking about here and somehow pull it into some summary that saw if there were relationships with the work we're doing and the decline in winter steelhead or not, or is there, again, is there something else we could be focusing on?
Well, that's really the charge of the steelhead work group, right? I mean, that's where we need to really, instead of tacking on some data reviews at the end of the meeting,
right,
kind of put together, organize, get the data together, and really sit down and work through it rather than kind of having it as an ancillary agenda item.
That actually is an excellent point. And in fact,
you sound surprised.
No. Well, you know, the summer steelhead, it was called summer steelhead work group in the biological opinion. We can call it a steelhead work group. I don't care what we call it. But you're right. I think that's probably the best way to focus attention on it is have an actual working group that meets on a monthly basis and just looks at the problem. And I don't even know who would belong in that group. Certainly not me. I don't know what I'm doing. But you know, people like Cameron and you, Bob, and other folks that we contract with. I mean, there's some folks who have a lot of knowledge about steelhead, and I just think more attention needs to be paid to them.
And I think we need to kind of really dig in our data, like you were saying before, and prepare for the meeting so we come in and, you know, putting the pieces together, A, B, C, equal B.
And I think that list that Dave mentioned is a good start, and from there we can go into some sort of summary or synthesis to kind of determine what are the data gaps.
Yep.
What do we want to get on the table in the near term and in the long term for our meeting anyway.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. Action item for Chris. He's going to. We'll dig this thing out. I know Lance sent that out a year ago.
Yeah, and so I think that's a good way to go forward. So, and then also put up some feelers and try to get some of the upper people in ODF&W kind of work. I need to continue to work those discussions with Lance and Steve and others and say, hey, and really put something formal together.
Yeah. And
one thing I'd like to see on the north, but I don't know how feasible or possible it is, but one thing that nobody seems to know is exactly what the gas levels are as far as being lethal, non-lethal, you know, maybe just hurting fish, at what level in each of the stages. I mean, the one thing we fight here is on the north is, you know, these gas levels during spawning and incubation and what actually is lethal, what's not lethal, you know. You know, that would kind of determine where we're going to put these fish in the future. Putting them above is a good idea or not. But, you know, nobody, in any literature I find or see and talk to people, nobody knows exactly what those levels are, you know, and how long, duration, percentages, you know, and then going back and looking at, you know, flow regimes during incubation and spawning flows. I mean, I think those are your major inhibitors to recovering these fish in these upper watersheds.
And Bob had mentioned earlier that there is a concept out there. I think it got ranked fairly high, didn't it? Have you done the ranking yet? Or?
No, it just went out, and I got to go back and review because there's so many different concept papers.
Oh, okay.
I believe we are soliciting for that, though.
So it's on the list, I think. I just, whether it gets funded or not, I don't know.
Well, my perspective, too, is with a place like Big Cliff or Foster or Dexter or something like that, The repair, fixing the problem, it isn't that technical. It isn't that hard to do. We've done it throughout the FCRPS. In fact, if you look at Foster, those are basically Clumber River spillways anyways. I think with a very little investment, we could go in there and solve these problems below the re-recs. Okay. Now, a place like the Highhead Project is much different, but you've got the re-rec pool, hopefully less of an issue because typically it just dissipates out, crackles out within the re-red pool.
So, Cameron, do you want to talk about some of the data you sent over this morning?
Let's dive in. Elise in the district sent these over yesterday late afternoon, and I have been compiling the historical kind of raw data from these very, very, very limited spot surveys that have happened over many years. North and South San Yam, and a little bit of data on the Kalapuya. All I had time to do was to kind of integrate the 2014 data into the tributary surveys that occur in the South San Yam. That's what's in this spreadsheet. Thomas, Crabtree, and Wiley Creek. And then it is simply put, it is the roughest approximation of spawner abundance that you can get. I mean, the very, very limited funds for systematic spawner surveys for steelhead, they're very difficult and expensive to pull off on a scale that's more quantitative, but I guess it's something we already do. The long-term trend for red densities, which in a sense kind of corrects for variance year to year and how many miles of tributaries can be surveyed, there's a downward trend. It's incredibly variable. I think I've made this point a couple of times in our science review, is that, and this is a good example, go back to Thomas Creek. We have episodes like in the mid-90s where we think these indices of spawner abundance went really, really low, and then they're followed a few years later by really good recruitment and large numbers of spawners. Well, we're down in the low numbers again in recent years.
Yeah.
But 2014, the most recent data we have, we don't have 2014 for Thomas.
Right.
Going to Crabtree Creek. We have some 2014 data from Crabtree and Wiley Creek, and numbers are low.
Hey, do you think, Cameron, you mentioned that these are kind of, you call them spot surveys, I think?
Right, so the headers for the columns in each survey year, surveyors try to get out there, and they've got these reaches that they've selected that were developed many years ago, at least in part by Wayne Hunt, where they try to get to these particular reaches and survey the same reaches over and over. But if you look at the miles surveyed, it's not very consistent over time. Some years it's low, and some years it's higher.
Right.
But they do count the maximum number of reds in each of the survey reaches, and then just dividing the number of reds into the miles surveyed gives you a reds per mile or red density. And then we track the 5-year and 10-year average. And I haven't put them in there because I just didn't have time, but for 2014 we also, of course, have Willamette Falls counts. So you can try to look to see how consistent the proportion of reds is relative to the total number of fish in crossing Willamette Falls.
Right, right.
If I had to say that these data right here are suggesting that we need to do better. If we wanted to get at a level of accuracy and precision that's commensurate to sort of what we have for Chinook salmon, we've got a very large investment to get from this right here to something where we could say the absolute estimate of winter steelhead is X and the absolute estimate of summer steelhead is X in each of the subbasins. These are simply tributary spawning surveys. We have some main stem data, but it's just like this is not truly quantitative. The main stem spawning data is even less so.
Do you these are three tributaries of South San Yam, and then you say is there a lot of main stem spawning going on too in the South San Yam?
Not a lot, and more so in the North San Yam. So we have pretty good qualitative assessments of winter steelhead spawning that, for example, occurs below Bennett Dam, which is problematic because our best estimate of abundance comes from Bennett Dam counts. But fish that spawn below Bennett Dam wouldn't be included in those counts because they don't go up through Bennett Town.
Is there any way to solicit volunteer help? Like, you know, you've got these wild fish groups out there. You know, I mean, are there people who just love to run out and volunteer and spend time looking at stuff to help you guys out? Obviously, like you said, it takes a lot of effort and money to do this.
But just off the cuff, because of the, how about we'll call it the demographic of the people that are most about wild steelhead and wild salmon issues in the Willamette.
Yeah.
You're unlikely to find many volunteers that would go out in the dead of winter
mm-hmm.
to survey for these fish, survey for the reds.
Maybe another thought is, I wonder if maybe we had 1 or 2 years of really intensive, i.e. costly, survey work, if it could even be done. If for no other reason.
Well, Corps funded in the whole buyout.
Right.
A summer steelhead spawner abundance survey. So it was a grits-based design, about as good as you could get. They published that. But for reasons, this before our time, Dave, you and I at least, for reasons back at that time, there was no pressure or real interest in investing in estimating the absolute abundance of winter steelhead. It was entirely focused on escapement of hatchery origin summer steelhead.
Right.
If it was going to happen, knowing what we know now collectively, I'd say I hope we'd all agree that if we're using the Chinook model to describe what we want to know about steelhead, we have to look at the abundance of both hatchery origin and wild origin fish at the same time. I don't want to be a downer about it, but it's a very, very large effort, and that translates into a great deal of expense.
Yeah.
Worth doing, I think, but I'm not cutting the checks.
Yeah, so, gosh, I don't know. Maybe there's some way we could...
So these data are below dam, Dave, these data were on the HRME program?
These winners?
The funding for collecting...
No, I don't think any of this was.
Okay.
Was it, Cameron? No, yeah. Any of this came from the task force.
The ones we're looking at right now in the spreadsheet?
Yep.
Up through 2013, Dave agreed to let us give 2 EBA months, that's experimental biological aids, to the district. So we just gave them 2 young, fit people for 1 month during peak spawning of steelhead to do the surveys with Alex Ferrant, the assistant fish bio. We did not have the freeboard this past year to do that, so Alex had to do it alone. As money becomes available, we would like to become more involved with supporting the district in their efforts to do these surveys, but don't have it right now.
Okay. What about this thought? I'm not a statistician, so don't attack me. But, you know, we've been collecting copious amounts of data on spring chinook year after year after year after year after year. What about alternating every other year and focusing on steelhead? You know, so that way you put all your money in steelhead 1 year and all your money in spring chinook, with the idea that, you know, we've got enough data from spring chinook, we can start to see trends pretty well. So if you missed every other year, I don't know, I'm just asking that question.
Well, or I was going to, not to cut you off there, but earlier on when we were having troubles with the genetics works that ODFW is now funding, we talked about reviewing the program, reviewing the priorities within the HRME program, and maybe this is a case where this would rise up to the top as well, and there may be some stuff, maybe it's not flip-flopping every year, or maybe it is. I don't know, but that... I think that prioritization needs to be done. It's kind of my point here, because I think these are pretty important data.
Mm-hmm.
So should we form a team?
I see a team. Yeah.
Have your work group started.
Yeah, it's a work group, not a team.
I have Walker as your chair.
There you go.
There you go.
Burn the chair. No, we got to. Yeah, burn the guy with the purse strings. holding those purse strings tight.
So, I mean, we started this kind of going into this conversation talking about data needs. Well, I mean, there's a continued data need right here, and thanks for showing these data.
Yeah. Want to talk about the other TRIBs real quick, Cam, or what?
All right, the story is the same.
Okay.
I can't click on these, Dave. It's your computer. Darn. Sorry.
Let's tell a story on graphic.
Similar trends in each of the subbasins. There are episodes of relatively high abundance and episodes of very, very low abundance. And that basically means you've got a hell of a spawner recruit function going on where you can get three to good numbers of fish from very small numbers of spawners very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
They're resilient. That's something to take home with a smile, is that they are resilient. They can bounce back from protracted low levels of abundance.
Resilient and adaptive.
Well, that looks just like commas.
Wow, that's variable. That is crazy.
Well, it's not just the fish aren't necessarily that variable. Excuse me. There's also variance in the way the surveys have been conducted over time. And survey conditions, I mean, if the water's muddy, you can't see the reds. And it's the middle of the winter in the Pacific Northwest. So
sure.
Sampling air, and there's natural variability driven by presumably ocean conditions and freshwater habitat variance.
Yeah, because I was looking at the numbers over Willamette Falls as well.
Yeah. All right, other thoughts? We shall form a steelhead work group. Tammy's got it in the notes.
You will do it.
We'll figure out who the chair is going to be. Chairs. Whoever wants to participate. No, we don't want to say that. It's not voluntary.
Mm. So it takes some work and some thought. We got some data coming in. There's a couple important data pieces that are still coming in. There's also important data that's already been collected.
We have an action item for me. I will dig up that Lance Kruzik memo and. When I find that, I'm going to send it out to folks and say, please add in whatever is missing here.
This is Cameron again. I'm not sure, maybe it came up when I was running for coffee, but there was one interesting observation by Chris's group in the Jepson radio telemetry report where, Chris, are you still on the phone?
I am.
Did you talk at all about your parsing of Willamette Falls counts using your radio telemetry data?
Are you talking about the estimation of escapement by tributary using the Willamette Falls count?
Correct.
Yes, sure, I can do that.
That's an estimate of abundance. And we have a couple of instances that don't actually think, Chris, I don't think it made it into the report. There were some edits I put into it, but we've got some indications that those estimates aren't too far off because we've got hard counts of fish at the Bennett facility of winter and summer fish that, at least for the winters, line up pretty well with the estimates that Chris came up with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that comparison didn't make it into the report. It's table 5 in the report for anybody who wants to go looking for it. So we provided estimates for the Clackamas, Tualatin, Malala, Rickerel, North South Sandyam, Kalapuya, McKenzie, Fall Creek, and Middle Fork. Though I will say only 3 of those had 29 fish or more returned to them. So, you know, the estimates are certainly a relative estimate. And the other caveat is that this is only for fish that were passing during the sampling period, and there's potential for earlier fish to have that we weren't able to sample in 2012, 2013, to have influenced the total escapement. We did a better job in 2014 of covering the whole run. So this exercise, when we do it again, should be more accurate across the entire run.
Okay.
Well, and then when you get the adult genetic component as well, Chris, you'll know then those fish going into those trips who they really are.
Yep, and it'll be very interesting to see how well the estimates using, you know, fin clips versus genetic identification reconcile. Hmm. We're excited.
We're excited.
Stay tuned.
Me too.
Okay, it's unanimous.
What else? How about around the table here, Chris?
I'm done.
Any further thoughts? Bob?
So there were some action items. Sam's going to work them out. I'm going to work them out. I'm going to have a follow-on with Lance and with Steve. And say, look, come on. This is an attempt to start getting the data together, but we need to do it formally. And there's some work that has to go into it. Any presentation, anytime you do anything, everything's well with the effort you put into it. And let's get the data together, do a synthesis, and kind of really work this issue.
Yeah, with the whole idea that can we direct some studies, or focus those studies more directly on project-related impacts or something.
You bet. And what actions can we take? There's downstream passage. There's definitely there. There's also...
Ultimately leading to actions. That's right. Absolutely.
There's downstream passage. There's different management actions. There's stocking practices. There's all kinds of different things. There's also, with those, there's alternatives where you can, you know, you're stocking elsewhere. There's all kinds of different ways we can address this. And we all want to be part of the solution, so let's work on it.
All right. I'm excited. Okay, well, I don't know. It sounds like we're running out of gas.
And it's lunchtime.
And it's almost lunchtime, so we can refuel. I think that's it at our end here. I gave us all kinds of time to chat about this case. You know, we were getting all worked up and had tons of stuff to talk about, but it sounds like it may not be the case today. But I want to thank all of you for participating, and stay tuned. We'll get some really detailed meeting notes out to you. Thank you to Tammy. with whatever action items will be on there, one belonging to me. Anything else from folks on the phone? Otherwise, we're going to say have a nice day and sign off.
Thanks all.
Okay, hey, don't forget, on I think July 29th, next Tuesday, we're going to do our commissioning at Gold Creek in case anybody wants to join us out there. Okay, thanks, guys.
Right. Bye.
I am going to unshare.